content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. Let's start with part of an article from AARP, the magazine, 1974, A Year to Remember, from Chinatown and Nixon's resignation to Hank Aaron and Happy Days. Many world changers made their mark 50 years ago. Here are 50 of them, and we won't get through all 50 today, but let's get started. Big flicks. Blazing Saddles, Mel Brooks directed and co-wrote both this, 3 Oscar nominations, highest box office of the year, and Young Frankenstein, 2 Oscar nominations, 4th highest box office. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This low-budget horror movie, which grossed more than $30 million, introduced audiences to the obvious idea that power tools are dangerous. Night Court tie-in. The narration is voiced by a very young John Larroquette. The Lords of Flatbush. This 1950 set film helped launch co-stars by Sly Stallone and Henry Winkler, who would go on to play Fonzie, a much cooler name than the one he had in this movie, Butchie Weinstein. Chinatown. In Robert Towne's original script, Faye Dunaway's character isn't killed, but director Roman Polanski wasn't a fan of anything close to a happy ending. Foxy Brown. When Inga DiCarlo Fung Marchand was 15 and looking for her rapper name, she asked Pam Grier if she could use her character's name from this blaxploitation film. Unlike Grier in the film, she was not found success through Lethal Vengeance. On the playlist, Waterloo by ABBA. This song became huge after ABBA sang it to win Eurovision, beating Olivia Newton-John, who came in 4th place. The next year's winner was Ding and Dong by Dutch group Teach N. Then we have Kiss's debut album. Peter Criss was the only member of the group who hired a makeup artist for the photo shoot of the cover. Everyone else insisted on doing it themselves. Rebel Rebel by David Bowie. He wrote the song for an unmade musical about Ziggy Stardust. It was the last single Bowie did in his distinctive glam rock style. John Denver. He had 2 songs hit number 1 on the charts that year, Sunshine on My Shoulders and Annie's Song. He was also named Poet Laureate of Colorado and acted on an episode of the police show McLeod. It would be another 5 years until the Muppets saw his hair, realized he was one of them, and invited him on their show. And Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe, by Barry White, a fan of The Simpsons. White recorded a version of this song for the 1993 episode Whacking Day, in which he appears as a guest who helps save the snakes that are normally killed during this summer Springfield holiday. Just trust me, it totally makes sense in the show. And then for TV debuts, Little House on the Prairie, in addition to burnishing Michael Landau's career and launching that of Melissa Gilbert, the show in 1981 featured Jason Bateman, who arrived to play an orphan adopted by the Ingalls family. Then we have Good Times. In this Maude spinoff, teenager JJ was played by 26-year-old comedian Jimmy Walker, who was only 8 years old, or excuse me, who was only 8 years younger than John Amos, who played his dad on the Norman Lear sitcom. Chico and the Man. Originally, the show was to star Cheech and Chong. When that didn't work out, the creator found a comedian named Freddie Prinze. Happy Days. The sitcom starring Ron Howard ran for 11 seasons on ABC. It originally premiered on the anthology series Love American Style. When creator Gary Marshall's kid got into aliens after Star Wars, Marshall wrote A Visitor from Outer Space into the show. He cast Robin Williams and then spun that story into the hit sitcom Mork and Mindy. Tornio Orlando and Dawn. When divorce ended the Sonny and Cher comedy hour, CBS replaced it with this show. Tony Orlando never divorced Dawn, though, since it was not a person, but the name of his group. And finally, for today, The Rockford Files. The show was co-created by Stephen J. Cannell, who also made The A-Team, 21 Jump Street, and The Commish, among others. And we'll delve into more of these next time. Now, also featured in this issue of AARP, the magazine, is, under the heading of Your 70s, a survival guide. Dodge your biggest health risks. And this is an extensive article, so we'll begin it today and then we'll continue it next time. Here are the deadliest threats to people in their 70s and how to keep them from catching up with you. Those of us in our 70s and beyond might think it's too late to make meaningful lifetime changes that can ward off the advance of chronic disease. Not so, says Ronald Peterson, MD, director of the Mayo Clinic Study of Aging, himself a septuagenarian. I tell people, and I'm not exaggerating in the slightest, that it's never too late to take control of your life and actually affect the trajectory. AARP looked at five of the top killers of people in their 70s, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, and quizzed the leading scientists in each area on their best advice for sidestepping the dangers of the coming decade. First, let's look at heart disease. 3 in 4 people will experience a cardiovascular incident after the age of 70. One person dies every 33 seconds in the U.S. from cardiovascular disease. The most common age for the first heart attack is 65 for men and 72 for women. So cardiovascular disease is not something that you can or should avoid thinking about until tomorrow. Most people in their 70s will have some thickening and hardening in their coronary arteries, some plaque buildup, says Seth Martin, MD, a preventative cardiologist at Johns Hopkins Hospital. That does not mean a heart attack or other heart-related health challenge is a foregone conclusion, especially if you've managed to avoid or quit nicotine and other high-risk activities. The public health campaigns against smoking have had an effect, and more people are being vigilant about their cholesterol numbers and taking statins when necessary, says Martin. But heart disease is still alarmingly common, with 3/4 of people over 70 having some kind of cardiovascular incident, according to the latest statistics from the American Heart Association. It's time to be proactive about your heart health. 1. Know your numbers. Get your blood pressure and cholesterol and glucose levels checked at least once a year, and make sure to tell your healthcare provider about any relatives who have had heart disease before the age of 65. And while you're there, ask about whether you should get a calcium score. Wait, what's that? It's a 5-minute CT scan that looks to see if you have any plaque around the arteries of your heart, says Mark Eisenberg, MD, an associate professor of medicine at Columbia University and co-author of Am I Dying? A Complete Guide to Your Symptoms and What to Do Next. While not everyone needs a calcium score, if you have a moderate risk for cardiovascular disease because of high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or family history, your doctor may want you to take just such a scan. A score between 1 and 10 means you have a less than 10% chance of developing heart disease, while a higher score means you should consider more aggressive preventive treatments, such as taking cholesterol medication, says Eisenberg. It's one more piece of useful information to have. Hit the trail. Even after a lifetime of inactivity, regular exercise can do wonders for your heart health. If you find at least a few minutes every day to walk with just a little urgency, like you're trying to catch a bus. That's almost better than anything a doctor could do for you. When you're ready to get more ambitious, shoot for 40 minutes of walking per day, 5 days a week. The effects can be as profound as taking a statin. But the pace should be brisk, not a casual stroll. Walking at a pace where you can still carry on a conversation, but you're breathing a little harder and your heart rate increases, will have the most beneficial results for both you and your heart health and your overall longevity. Don't skip breakfast. People who skip breakfast may be at a higher risk for heart disease. Though further study into this issue is needed, says Kershaw Patel, MD, a preventative cardiologist at Houston Methodist Hospital. One study looked at 6,550 adults and found that skipping breakfast made them 2.5 times more likely to die of a heart-related episode than those who enjoyed a healthy morning meal every day. Another study found a 21% increased risk for cardiovascular disease among people who waited until midday to eat. But that doesn't mean starting your day in the donut drive-thru is going to extend your life. In general, a healthy breakfast includes fresh foods, Patel said. If you're somebody who considers coffee and a pastry breakfast, try planning in advance to make sure you're getting the most heart-healthy options, from grab-and-go hard-boiled eggs to rolled oats, yogurt, and fresh fruit. And make time for sex. Having sex regularly can reduce a man's chances of dying from heart disease by 50%, according to a study in the American Journal of Cardiology, while women who report satisfying sex lives are less likely to develop peripheral artery disease. But while sex can provide a boost of exercise, it's about more than just the physical act. It's about the emotional connection. Simply being alone and isolated can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 29%. For men in particular, just being in a happy marriage where you feel emotionally supported can lead to better overall heart health. Next, we'll look at cancer. The best way to save your own life? Get the cancer screenings you need now. Let's start with the bad news. Most people over the age of 70 have 100 billion cells with at least one cancer-associated mutation, according to a 2021 study from the University of Colorado Cancer Center. That doesn't mean you have cancer or even that you'll eventually get cancer. Even people who go their entire lives without a cancer diagnosis have these mutations. Our bodies have evolved amazing mechanisms to stop cancer in its tracks, said James DeGorio, the biochemist who conducted the research. But all it takes is one of those cells to go rogue, and it becomes a full-blown cancer. The odds of that happening increase when you hit 70, with more than 2,000 cancer cases per 100,000 Americans, nearly four times the risk in your early 50s, according to the National Cancer Institute. One main reason? Your immune system has taken a beating over the years, and it's not as efficient as killing cancerous cells as it was during those first six decades. The cells in our body are constantly being exposed to DNA damage, whether it's sunlight or pollutants from our environment, says Wendy Chen, MD, an oncologist at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Our body is always furiously trying to repair it, but after 50, the balance between repair and damage doesn't always match up. Still, there are steps you can take to help your immune system bring its A game. 1. Get the screenings you need. This is the age where cancer starts to pop up, says Nigel Brockton, Vice President of Research at the American Institute for Cancer Research and a two-time cancer survivor. Getting screened is more important than ever. But which screenings are right for you? It depends on your lifestyle and family history. To get started, Brockton suggests that you visit cancerhealthcheck.org, run by the AICR. It's a quick assessment that can alert you to your specific lifestyle risk factors. It can also prompt you to have a more meaningful talk with your doctor. Everyone knows that women should be getting mammograms every 2 years after 50, says Chan. But what about screening for lung cancer or cervical cancer or prostate cancer? Not everyone needs them, but you've reached an age when it's time to discuss it with your doctor. It's up to you to be the squeaky wheel. 2, get vitamins from plants when possible. Most studies have found that nutritional supplements aren't very effective at lowering cancer risk. DiGregorio says, you're better off getting your vitamins the natural way with fresh fruits and veggies. Plant-based foods contain thousands of unique compounds, polynutrients, that help repair DNA and potentially slow the growth rate of some cancer cells, among many functions, says Annette Goldberg, a dietitian at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. They're also low in calories, making it easier to control or lose weight, which is especially important given the connection between obesity and a higher risk for breast, colorectal, esophageal, kidney, gallbladder, uterine, pancreatic, and liver cancers. But be wary of superfoods that promise a silver bullet, Goldberg says. There's no conclusive evidence that any specific food can prevent cancer. The key is to eat a wide variety of products and other healthy food. Take a brisk walk. Regular exercise is one of the most effective ways of reducing your cancer risk, and even short periods of activity can help, says Chen. A 2023 study published in JAMA Oncology found that subjects who walked briskly for at least 4 to 5 minutes a day, even if they didn't otherwise exercise, were 31% less likely to die of 13 different types of cancer than people who just strolled gently from place to place. The key is walking quickly rather than taking a leisurely stroll. And 4, worry less. In addition to a healthy diet, exercise, and not smoking, limiting your stress should be part of your strategy for reducing the risk of cancer and other diseases, says DiGregorio. So, be healthy, but don't stress out about being healthy. You'll undo any good you're accomplishing if you're just worrying about not doing enough. Do I still have a beer at night? Sure. Just don't have 3 beers. We have a little sidebar article. Leading killers of 70-somethings, heart disease, 503,000, cancer, 368, COVID-19 or influenza and pneumonia, they're all grouped together, 161,000. Cerebral vascular diseases such as stroke or aneurysm, 130, Alzheimer's disease, 116, chronic lower respiratory disease, 109, unintentional injuries, 60, diabetes, 59, kidney disease, 41, Parkinson's disease, 37. Now, from AARP, the Bulletin, let's look at this money article, Selling Your Parents' Home, which sort of relates to what we were talking about last time. How to handle the logistical and emotional challenges. Even in the best of circumstances, selling a home can be stressful. But selling a late parent's home, a transaction potentially fraught with grief, financial urgency, and family drama, that takes the difficulties to a whole other level. It just makes your head spin, says Jacqueline Tananzo of Comic, New Jersey, who last July sold the house her late parents had occupied for 50 years. You're taking care of your own home, and then you're being asked to know, when did my parents get an oil burner? How old is the roof? Here's a game plan if you have this task. Step 1, clarify roles. If you're the sole heir, you have the right to do whatever you want with the house. But when no specific instructions are given and other heirs are involved, things can get more complicated. The estate's executor, the person formally assigned to administer the dead person's property and distribute assets, ultimately has sole authority to determine the home's disposition. says Crystal Wes Edwards, an elder law attorney in Morrisville, New Jersey. You may be the executor, but your siblings will also want their say. Some may want to keep the property, while others might want a fast sale. Coming to an agreement is difficult while you're in mourning, says Michael Gifford, CEO and co-founder of Splitero, a financial technology company in San Diego. After people have time to grieve, consider calling an all-hands family meeting. Be gentle with each other, says Maureen McDermott, a real estate advisor. Keeping an open dialogue with your fellow heirs will minimize the likelihood of legal challenges later. Step 2, line up help. You'll need at least 3 on-site professionals to assist with the sale. An appraiser should give you the price for the home as it stands, which is important for tax purposes. You might also get major systems inspected, including the roof, plumbing, and electricity. These could impact a buyer's ability to get a loan. A local real estate agent can price the home correctly and shepherd it through the sales process, says Danny Hertzberg, a sales associate with Jill's Zender Group brokerage in Miami. A real estate attorney can help with any outstanding issues, including unpaid taxes and missing paperwork. Step 3. Assess outstanding debts. Your real estate agent or attorney will run a preliminary title report, which will show if there are any mortgages or liens on the home. That's when you might learn that your parents had a second or reverse mortgage. It's also not uncommon for older homeowners to forget to pay their property taxes, since in the past it was part of their monthly mortgage payment. A little research could reveal whether there's a lien on the property for unpaid labor. Any of these issues can delay or prevent a sale, so get them cleared up as soon as possible. Any money owed will be among the first payments settled with the proceeds from the sale. Step 4. Maintain the home. An uninhabited home is ripe for developing maintenance issues, such as freezing pipes or a leaky roof. Appearance matters, too. A property that looks abandoned is more likely to be vandalized. You could hire a handyman or a lawn maintenance crew who did this work for your parents, or use someone recommended by a real estate agent. If you aren't yet able to access an estate's bank account to pay these expenses, keep an itemized list of payments in order to be reimbursed later. Maintain insurance on the house and let the insurance company know the home is vacant. Otherwise, the insurer might not pay a claim for theft and damages. You might need an insurance policy intended for vacant buildings. And finally, step 5, prepare for the sale. Don't invest in renovations if you're unlikely to get much more money out of the sale than what you'll put in. But do fix glaring problems unless your agent recommends an as-is sale. Phillips suggests removing any modifications installed to accommodate an aging parent. She and her siblings, for example, removed the stair lift in their late mother's home. Finally, be aware that the emotional pain of clearing out your parents' possessions may be an obstacle to preparing the home for sale. That's why Tenonzo hired someone to empty her parents' house and store certain items for her and her sister to go through later. I used to joke with my mom that you've got to get rid of this stuff, she said. And she would say, oh, that's your problem someday. And she was right. It was. Now let's go back to 1974. A year to remember. Products we still love. Supermarket barcodes. The first item scanned, a 10-pack of Juicy Fruit, is in the Smithsonian, but acts as a facsimile. A shame, as it would likely still be fresh. Meow Mix. It's wildly popular and somewhat annoying ad jingles consist solely of the word meow. Some say the CIA plays it on repeat to wear down prisoners. Volkswagen Golf. Though it was called the Rabbit when it first sold here, the phrase multiplying like golfs never caught on. Richard Nixon's resignation. In the first Gallup poll after Gerald Ford pardoned Nixon on September 8th, the new president's approval ratings plummeted from 71% to 50%. Gary Springer, elected to the Cincinnati City Council at 27. Springer resigned after being caught writing a check to a prostitute, a scandal tailor-made for the Jerry Springer Show. Ted Bundy. He killed at least 11 women in Washington and Utah that year. Earlier, he had been on Seattle's Crime Prevention Advisory Commission. Skylab. Three American astronauts returned after 84 days in the U.S. space station. When Skylab fell to Earth 5 years later, NASA was unsure where the debris would land. People bought bullseye T-shirts and cans of Skylab repellent. A hotel in North Carolina painted a target on its roof and threw a poolside disco party. Oscar Streaker, co-host David Niven, was introducing Elizabeth Taylor when he was rudely interrupted by Robert Opel. Niven's ad-lib about Opel's shortcomings got big laughs. Patty Hearst's kidnapping. The Symbionese Liberation Army, the far-left terrorist group that abducted William Randolph Hearst's granddaughter, took its name from the word symbiosis to encompass its plan to unify all progressive causes. Books. The Power Broker by Robert Caro. Though the biography of Robert Moses is almost 1,300 pages, Kerr had cut it by 350,000 words. If Beale Street Could Talk by James Baldwin. Regina King won an Oscar for her role in the 2018 film version of Baldwin's fifth novel. Jaws by Peter Benchley. Benchley, a struggling journalist, got only $1,000 for the first 100 pages, so he wrote the rest in a converted turkey coop. We are all lucky this isn't a book without being attacked by a wild turkey. And finally, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert Persig. Phil Jackson, William Shatner, and Tim Allen all said this was the book that most affected them. The bike, Persig maintained, is now in the Smithsonian. Well, folks, we have once again run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.